Hello, everybody. Let us continue now with program 10 in the essays that we find in the externalization of the hierarchy. And I just want to use this heavily underlined, highlighted section as a little bit of a bridge, because it's a wonderful definition of the intuition. Well, anyway, the distinguishing quality of this nucleus of the fifth kingdom, you know, these little groups that are culled out of the new group of world servers, it's the ability to respond intuitionally to higher impression and to present the mind with which humanity was endowed in the earlier process long ago, 21 million years ago, to the light of the intuition and hence to illumination. That's a much further step than was possible in the earlier days of converting animal man into the human being. This intuition, now here it goes, this intuition is a blend of the two divine qualities of buddhi manas. And you know what we're talking about there, because if we look at the map, buddhi is of the fourth plane, and its fourth subplane is specifically the intuition. Each one of the subplanes has a different kind of siddhi or power, and manas, of course, especially the higher mind. So it's a combination of the two lower aspects of the spiritual triad, both of them really quite high, actually, but compared to spiritual will, these are the two, the middle and the lowest aspect. Okay, so it's the intuition is a blend of the two divine qualities of buddhi manas, and I'm calling this the frontier of the more advanced humanity, or intuitive spiritual understanding. So intuitive spiritual instinct, you know, this relates to the third initiation and the mental illumination and, you know, high mentality to the second initiation. Intuitive spiritual understanding involving interpretation and identification. So involving Mercury for interpretation and Neptune for identification and Jupiter too. And the higher abstract mind, that's the lowest point of the spiritual triad, which is essentially the power to comprehend that which is not concrete or tangible, but which is in reality an innate recognition of the lower aspects of the divine plan. That's really important, as it must affect the three worlds. You know, if you go into a more advanced philosophy class, or consider the Eastern philosophy in its refined nature, you are entering the realm of the higher abstract mind. I think that, you know, that's pretty obvious. All right. Now we can go on. Humanity being still primarily self-conscious and self-centered, you know, not centered in the group, not centered in the one or the whole, regards this plan as the divine plan for man. I mean, we are anthropocentered, anthropocentric, as it were, but as the seed groups grow and develop, I guess a more planetary perspective comes into being, the narrowness of this partial view will become increasingly apparent. We have to begin to think in terms of the planet. Well, I mean, you know, there is the egotistical thinking or egoistical thinking of one's own little apparent self, and then it begins to expand out from the family and the community and eventually, the patriotism and the nation, and eventually of humanity as a whole, but that's still far from the complete story. All the different kingdoms of nature have to be considered our entire globe, the several globes that are found in the planetary chain, and then the several chains that are found in the planetary scheme. And we have to begin to think of all these planetary schemes within our little universe, which we call our solar system. That term universe, you know, is sometimes used in quite a narrow way. It's not the grand entirety. Anyway, our range of awareness and our range of interest continually expands. Okay, God's plan is all-embracing, at least with regard to the planet, and his purposes are inclusive of all forms of life and their relationships. Now, it depends on what we mean by God. We have God's plan, the plan of the planetary logos, but we also have God's plan as the solar logos, you see, and that's far more embracing. This quality of the seed groups is described in current esoteric literature as love wisdom. It's very related to the intuitive faculty, very related, because the quality of love wisdom is expressed on the Buddhic plane. Okay, it's sort of the sixth principle, you might call it, maybe from another perspective, the second principle. The quality of the seed groups is described in current esoteric literature as love, wisdom, the heart nature, and the higher mind. Okay, now that is another good definition, isn't it? Love, wisdom, the heart nature, and the higher mind. All right. That's something we should take into consideration, and we will. And this is descriptive of the future groups, you know, which are just now getting their start. It is not love, however, as usually understood, or wisdom as man generally defines it. You know, nor is the psychology studied by the psychological seed group the kind of popular psychology which is developing within the race of man at the moment. It's something much more and theosophically embracing. Okay, so this will be descriptive of future groups, and it's not love, however, as usually understood, or wisdom as man generally defines it. This is free of emotion, a love free of emotion and of astralism, which is distinctive of the solar plexus life which most people live. Love esoterically, it looks like we're getting some good definitions here, and in reality is perceptive understanding, the ability to recognize that which has produced an existing condition and a consequent freedom from criticism. Very important. You know, it reminds me of the statement that to that to understand all is to forgive all. So love esoterically and in reality is perceptive understanding, the ability to recognize that which has produced an existing situation and a consequent freedom from criticism. That's why this type of love is sometimes called a loving understanding. It involves that beneficent silence which carries healing in its wings and which is only expressive when the inhibition part of silence is absent and the man no longer has to still his lower nature and quiet the voices of his own ideas in order to understand and achieve identification with that which is to be loved. It's amazing. Can you follow the beauty of this concept and comprehend the nature of this silent depth of true understanding? And, certainly we cannot yet do it as the Tibetan can do it, not yet. But at least the ideal is given here, and I'm going to just kind of I'm going to highlight this, and of course, it's such a good one that one has to copy it and put it. This is from EXH. What page? Hopefully, we find that page very quickly. All right, this is page 99. So, this is EXH 99, and we put, whoop, sorry. This will be of value to you later. All right, so let's call it definition of love. And we will copy it and save as and browse. It's a little bit cumbersome, but it is useful. Definition of love, and it will be found here. All right, good. So, I've got to read it again, don't I? Because DK says it's beautiful, and important. All right. So, love wisdom, it's called love wisdom. It's the heart nature and the higher mind. It is, the only way to describe it, it is triadal. The kind of love that he is talking about is triadal. And I want to put that here. This type of love, wisdom, is triadal. And this is descriptive of the future groups. So when we're forming our groups, these kinds of activities, this way of expression is for us to cultivate. It is not love, however, as usually understood, or wisdom, oftentimes that worldly wisdom, that we have to be on guard lest we succumb to it instead of true wisdom. As usually understood, or wisdom as man generally defines it, this type of love wisdom is free from emotion and of the astralism, which is distinctive of the solar plexus life which most people live. Think of it, maybe 80%, 85%. Love, esoterically, and in reality, is perceptive understanding. So, there is this intuitive perception that we begin to have, and we see things as they are. The ability to recognize that which has produced an existing situation. So a keen sense of causes leading to any particular situation, good or bad. And, this will be also related to the ability to read past lives. And a consequent freedom from criticism. I have a feeling that the inculcation of love wisdom in the consciousness will facilitate the reading of past lives. This is a sense that I get about it. And a consequent freedom from criticism is not from biting your tongue and trying to prevent the critical mind from thinking criticism and speaking criticism. It actually, criticism is dissolved in this loving understanding. Now, it involves that beneficent silence which carries healing in its wings and which is only expressive when the inhibition aspect of silence, we all know what that is. My grandmother used to say, bite your tongue. Okay, if I said something wrong, it's sort of the old old country, old school way of saying, whoop, cut it, you know. When the inhibition aspect of silence is absent and the man no longer has to still his lower nature and quiet the voices of his own ideas, often very critical ideas, in order to understand and achieve identification. So understanding and the achievement of identification go hand in hand. To understand and achieve identification with that which must be loved. So here DK is really, you know, he's often such a scholar, but here he's bringing out very much, and you see it, the second ray aspect of his nature, you know. And each one of us can ask ourselves, can I follow the beauty of this concept and comprehend the nature of this silent depth of true understanding? It's so different, isn't it, from the critical concrete mind leaping into activity and then sort of tearing to pieces that which is in front of it. Well, we have a lot to learn. And as we move from focus within the concrete lower mind and into the soul and into the spiritual triad via the Antikarana, this type of love wisdom can appear. Can you follow the beauty of this concept and comprehend the nature of this silent depth of true understanding? Just pause for a moment, you know, and think of someone that you love. And practice for a moment that which the Tibetan is here suggesting, the silent depth of true understanding. It is very deep, isn't it, really? And maybe very different from how we might reflexively respond. But when we can reflexively respond with this silent depth of true understanding that allows us to achieve identification, there's a really big hint here. You know, you can see it, can't you? Now let's see. A really big hint is given in all of the above. Okay. Now wisdom. Wisdom is the sublimation of the intellect. And maybe this has to do, you know, I think with the abstract mind, but this involves the sublimation of the higher as well as of the lower aspects of the mind. All right. So it's not just the abstract mind, is it? It's something more while including the abstract mind. Wisdom is the sublimation of the intellect. I really love these essays because they just, somehow they really are containing, so many wonderful foundational definitions. You know, they are a collection of essays written over many, many years and, all put into the book called The Externalization of the Hierarchy. And this involves the sublimation of the higher mind, as well as of the lower aspects of the mind. It is a blend of intuition, spiritual perception, cooperation with the plan, and spontaneous intellectual appreciation of that which is contacted. And all this fused and balanced, blended with and by the love which I have defined above, plus that esoteric sense which must be unfolded before the second initiation can be taken. It's high. The second initiation is high. And so, you know, this is one of those great statements, great definitions. And what I'll do now, obviously I'm going to copy it, but I will turn off the process here and then come back. I think there's, you know, such a great value in extracting the Tibetan's most pithy statements, the ones that are truly foundational to an esoteric understanding of things rather than simply a human intellectual understanding. Of wisdom again, sublimating the higher and lower aspects of mind, a blend of intuition, spiritual perception, you know, intuitive instinct and spiritual perception, this leads to the third degree, cooperation with the plan, not just knowing it as something intellectual, but actually living one's life so that it somehow is the plan, an aspect of it, and spontaneous intellectual appreciation of that which is contacted. Notice we don't leave out the intellect. And all this is fused and blended with and by the love which I have defined above, plus that esoteric sense, the seventh sense, we might say, which must be unfolded even before the second initiation can be taken. Now think of that. You know, so many people are overestimating themselves before they have develop these factors from the time the second initiation is taken. Things are moving, you know, very, very fast. And DK is telling the disciple ISGL, well, you're working in the extreme concentration and intensity of taking the second initiation. So you see, we rate you highly, he says. So let's get a truer perspective concerning the elevation of these initiations. Okay, I call this especially to your attention. Seek to understand and perceive the subtle evidences of the esoteric sense, and then define it and explain its process and evidences, invoking as you do the higher sensibilities. I think he really he understands that most people, whatever their aspirations, most disciples and aspirants, whatever their aspirations, are still working with many of the lower sensibilities and have to refine their consciousness to a great degree, to a higher degree than they think so. And now, as to the methods to be employed in creating these groups, maybe I should have begun this whole book from the very beginning. There was seed group material in the beginning, but I'll come back to it. Okay. As to the methods to be employed in creating these groups, the primary method is the presentation of the more advanced ideas, which are stimulating in their effects upon the minds which are receptive, and the presentation of the vision, which is evocative in its influence and produces amazing results. I'm just, it's just like one nugget of gold after another. And I think perhaps, you know, this is one of the books that I read more lightly than others, and it's coming as a surprise to me, you know, how many of the very, very valuable statements that I've been familiar with during this almost 50 years of work in these books are coming from the externalization of the hierarchy. The methods to be employed in creating these C groups, the primary method is the presentation of the more advanced ideas, and the people who respond to them may be attracted into group formation that really wants to work for the divine plan along a specific service line. So the ideas are stimulating in their effects upon the minds which are receptive. And I'm assuming, you know, that if you've gotten this far in listening to many of these things, you have a receptive mind. And the presentation of the vision, which is evocative, come down here, in its influence and produces amazing results. So two factors are operating here. One is the presentation of the vision, I think many of us are always doing this. And the other is the presentation. Now, you know, we have an audience out there of the more advanced ideas. Okay. So we do have to have the higher or abstract mind operative, and the vision will become ever so much more vivid for us and comprehensible when our thought process is tinctured by buddhi. And, you know, that's not an easy thing. We sometimes, you know, glibly use these words, buddhi, atma, and so forth, but we have to remember that the hierarchy itself has its focus of consciousness within the spiritual triad, and we do not yet. We have some possible touch of the triad occasionally, maybe via the antikarana in process of being built. The basic method employed, which lay behind the three methods outlined in the secret doctrine and referred to above, was the presentation, very dimly and vaguely, of the concept of the self, of the lower integrated self, and its correlated implications of self-centeredness and self-direction. Okay, well, this is, you know, from Indian philosophy, the self is a key factor, and what is the scope of the self, which is operative in any individual? That is a Leonian factor, all the way from I am to I am that to I am that I am, or I am that and that that I am, and then finally, in a synthetic sense, I am that I am, you know, some kind of mantra that expresses what God the self is. God the self, you know. So many people think that that is a blasphemous kind of idea, but it isn't. There's one self, there's one being, and that is the ultimate God. So the basic method employed, there's a focus here upon the self as presented in the secret doctrine. I wish I knew exactly what page there, but I'll have to find that later, and so will you. The concept of the self, okay. The presentation made today, it's a little later, isn't it? You know, the same teacher, but probably 50 years later, or 40 years later, something like that. The presentation made today to self-conscious man and to this self-directed individual is the revelation of the larger whole, of which the individual is a part. Now, when you come to a book like a treatise on cosmic fire, or even, you know, sections in raised and initiations and certain essays here, that's exactly what you get. You get the revelation of the larger whole, and it is certainly inspiring. I wonder, you know, how many of us are inspired by this thought of being part of a larger whole, and ultimately, in some mysterious way, being that larger whole. You know, the idea of being God. This is not in any limited ring pass not sense. It's the deeper kind of thing that Master Jesus or the initiate Jesus realized upon the cross, as DK tells us in Glamour, A World Problem. So, the presentation then, the concept of the self, and now the presentation today to the self-conscious man, are we that? To this self and to the self-directed individual, that is a really an integrated personality, is the revelation of the larger whole of which the individual is a part. Now, if we come away, if we don't come away from the reading of the secret doctrine and the cosmic fire with this sense of the larger whole, then, you know, we haven't read with care. To this whole, the self must dedicate its life, love, and light. So, You know, are we ready to do that? Sometimes I serve the one. That's the Gemini mantram for the initiate. I carry the burden of the world in Aquarius, you know. Always in, if you sort of go to if you go here to esoteric astrology and you, oh, goodness, I really knew those pages inside out. Yeah, well, here's where they are. And 332 and 333, I serve the one. Okay, and here, a little more, under Aquarius, the server of all men, the burden of the world. See how inclusive and demanding it gets, you know, really helping Atlas carry his world. That is helping the planetary logos. Notice how wholeness is involved here with Cancer. The whole is seen as one. Yes. So right here, page 332, 333, a lot of important hints come forward about our relationship to the one. Okay. Sorry. There we go. Okay. So to this whole, the self must, I'm very arrested by this sentence. To this whole, the self must dedicate its life, love, and light. Those are the three gifts which the fourth kingdom of nature has finally and consciously to make to the planet. Okay. Wow. You know, I'm just sometimes brought into a state of awe by what the Tibetan rites, and you know, with it a state of humility, maybe an adjusted sense of right proportion to this whole. Think of it, think of it, and that to which you or I dedicate our lives. Is it true of us? To this whole, the self must dedicate its life. I wanna, somehow it gets a little bit darker than I want it to be. Okay. And go up here and try to release myself from that. Okay. Those are the three gifts which the fourth kingdom in nature has finally and consciously to make to the planet. Gifts of definitely directed energies producing peculiar and equally definite relations of forces. They are not the gift of strength, kindness, and knowledge, which is man's feeble interpretation of the divine energies with which he will someday salvage the planetary life. Again, I feel the need to somehow, I feel the need to emphasize this. Yes, the need to emphasize this and to reread it. You know, when you're pondering something, just read it and reread it until it really sinks in, you know? So these are the three gifts. Those are the three gifts. And I assume they are basically the life, the love, and the light, which the fourth kingdom in nature must has finally and consciously to make to the planet. Gifts of definitely directed energies producing peculiar and equally definite relations of forces. Maybe some of us have tried this a little bit, even though in a way we're supposed to simply be transparent channels for the forces and energies working through us, but maybe some of us have tried at times to direct energies. They are not the gift of strength, kindness, and knowledge. Well, these are good, but they are very human in their approximation of the greater things that we will be able to do with energies and forces. Strength, kindness, and knowledge are the feeble interpretation of what? Of the divine energies with which he will someday salvage the planetary life. And when we talk about divine energies, you know, the word spiritual is contrasted with divine. By the time we reach the second and the first subplane of the cosmic physical plane, it's up on the etheric levels, cosmic ethers, we're into divine energies. When we speak of spiritual energies, anything in the higher part of Brahma, you might say, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, higher mind, that is, and also the energies of the soul within the causal body, those are spiritual energies, so they have to be differentiated. Okay. Now, if I can be successful, I will find my bracket again, but maybe I'm not going to be successful. Yep, I am successful. All right. Stream of consciousness you're getting from me here a little bit, and I hope it's not too disturbing. Okay. The presentation of this vision to the aspirants and disciples of the world has had a dual effect. Now, who's been presenting? You know, Master DK has been presenting, you know, behind Blavatsky, behind Alice A. Bailey, maybe, you know, and some others of the masters who have had their amanuensis, never such of a voluminous presentation. Even Agni Yoga, as wonderful it is not as voluminous a presentation as Master DK made. Okay, it's had a dual effect. First of all, it has produced an immediate, responsive cohesion among them, which resulted in the appearance of the new group of world servers. Wow, now that's a major statement. So we're saying, you know, how did the new group of world servers precipitate? And here we see through the presentation of the vision. Amazing. And that's the dramatic results of which we have read above this. Amazing results. The production of such an interior group, loosely knit, in terms of outer organizational relationship, very loosely, but internally very powerful. That's an amazing result. So this presentation of the vision is what we're dealing with here and the effects that it has had. Okay. And secondly, it led to the formation along the line of the seven rays throughout the world of small groups within the new group of world servers who were dedicated to the production of this innate synthesis and subjective fusion and to the expression of this blended, dedicated consciousness. These latter groups, a small minority, correspond to the earlier and first mentioned mind implantation in animal man, whilst the new group of world servers corresponds to the second method of general stimulation. This is so illuminating, I feel. Okay, so let's make that a little bigger so that it stands out, you know. And, okay, and then we'll make this one stand out too. So we have, you know, we remember the way that animal man was raised into a human condition, and one was a direct implantation by the solar angels, and the other was a general stimulation. It's different, and the still other method was, in a way, to do nothing at all, apparently, and let the general process of evolution carry all forward. So the presentation of the vision has had dramatic effects. Dramatic effects of the presentation of the vision. Cohesion and new group of world servers, and then the small ray characterized group such as Master DK has been forming when he was working with Alice Bailey, and will continue until, I guess, the year 2200, because it's a 275-year process. Approximately at that time, maybe the original purpose of the process will be completed. All right. So these latter groups, the small minority of specialized service along seed group lines, these latter groups, and I'm going to kind of put that in, of specialized service along seed group lines, correspond to the earlier and first method of mind implantation in animal man, a direct relation with the solar angel through the implantation of an aspect of its consciousness within the causal body and mind and brain of the becoming of animal man becoming human. Whilst the new group of world servers in general corresponds to the method of general stimulation. How was that done? The fanning of the mental unit into greater activity. That mental unit had been rising altogether as instinct approximated intellect. That's what DK tells us. And somehow we have to put together all the different things that he's said, and then more light comes. We can read something in its place where he says it, and it's illuminating. And then when we put other related statements together, still more light breaks forth. Okay. In both of these embryonic activities, which will eventually be responsible for producing the manifestation of the kingdom of God on earth, the two great necessities are vision plus living organization. Well, new group of world servers and the specialized groups arising within them will be responsible for producing the manifestation of the kingdom of God on earth, you know, within humanity. This is the leaven. This is what makes human consciousness rise. The servers under Taurus send that beam of illumination, and still brighter light comes from the specialized groups emerging from, according to Ray Nature, emerging from within the new group of world servers. The vision has to be sensed, sought, and discovered individually by each group member. And it is this personal knowledge and this personal dedication to the revelation which leads next to the organization of the group life and relation. We organize around the vision, right? Okay, I think so. We who respond organize around the shared vision. So it's this personal knowledge of the vision and this personal dedication to the revelation which leads next to the organization of the group life. That's what DK was trying to bring about in his smaller groups and relation, or to a determined process of correlation with the life and purpose of the whole. A determined process of correlation, and those are those who really understand the plan in a greater sense, we might say, if we understand the plan in a higher sense than personal. Okay. The individual who has for himself seen the vision relates himself to the group which is conscious of this vision along with him, Think of the rays and the initiations and the kind of people who would follow that type of regimen, those requirements so demanding, following them together in full cooperation. The individual who has seen the vision relates himself to the group, which is conscious of this vision along with him, and then follows the relating of this visioning group to the kingdom of God as it exists on the subtler planes. Maybe the kingdom of the soul first and the kingdom of God. Well, we seem to be getting into Chohanship up there, monadic. When we talk about God, it's kind of a monadic realization that succeeds after the kingdom of the soul, though they are, of course, interrelated. And then follows the relating of this visioning group to the kingdom of God as it exists on the subtler planes, in the effort to exteriorize it and make the vision a fact upon the plane of manifestation. It is a process of vision, activity, and precipitation. I'm getting the sense that my reading of these things before, if it occurred, was very light. And I'm in quite amazement as I find new things here, new to me anyway, and just think this was all written, some 75 years ago. But of course, the master can think far ahead, and there's a certain timelessness, or at least an expansion of time, in what is written. He knew he was writing for the future, and when he was writing, for instance, in the rays and initiations, he knew that he was writing for those who would come afterwards. Okay, so it is in connection with vision that much of the group difficulty lies. All right, let me be specific and illustrate. I, your Tibetan brother, friend, and teacher, what a statement, have a vision of the plan. Everyone, every higher life has a vision of the plan, a master, a Chohan, a logos, a vision that is more and more universal. So here the Tibetan speaks of his own vision of the plan and his relationship to us. I am aware, because of my status as an initiate of a certain degree, he wasn't revealing, at this point, that he was a master. And because the inevitable effect would be that kind of undesirable, worshipful attitude. Instead of an attitude of cooperation, it would be worship and some kind of expectation that the master could do something for us. Okay. I'm aware, because of my status as an initiate of a certain degree, of the nature of the purpose for this particular cycle. Is it the Aquarian cycle? Whatever cycle it is. And what its conditioning activity should be, and to what end they are directed. For there is an esoteric distinction between the plan as it exists for humanity and for the planet, and the purpose of the present world situation. Upon this, reflection would be profitable. Another way of saying ponder on this, right? Okay, I just will. Maybe I accomplish nothing by underlining, but makes me feel better, It does give that sense of emphasis. So he has a vision. He has a status. He knows what the conditioning activities of the present cycle or coming cycle should be. And there is a plan for humanity and the planet. And how does this present world situation, which may or may not be specifically of the plan, can be bent towards the augmentation of the effectiveness of the plan. So many things arise on the planet which are not of the planet. I mean, otherwise the, let's just say, the precipitation of the Great War, especially the second part of it, need not have been necessary. It can be subsumed under the plan, related to the plan, but it was not a necessary part of the plan. Otherwise, the masters would not have tried so hard to prevent that precipitation. Everything can be turned, however, towards the execution of the plan. Through the cooperation of AAB, I put this plan as far as was possible before you, calling your attention to the new group of world servers. All right, he's speaking to his, to those students who have been, in a way, pulled out of the new group of world servers as these points of a higher tension, who specifically can relate by approved occult methods, hierarchy, and humanity. As far as I could and dared, that's an interesting word, because it's always a risk, you know. There was that debate about whether humanity was ready for the wisdom, and the story goes that Master Moria and KH really wanted to bring it closer, and other masters basically said, no, humanity is not ready, but permission was granted. So there is a daring involved here. As far as I could and dared, I put it before the world aspirants and called attention to the general trend of world events from the spiritual and subjective angle. Subjective angles. So, you know, maybe we don't see it in terms of the task of Master DK, how he approached it, and how he went forward under KH and Master Moria to bring this, as the messenger that he is, to bring this knowledge of the plan as much as he could to us. And there was a risk involved. Look, you know, think of it. The Nazis and the racists and the unconscious or conscious servitors of the Black Lodge in the last century got a hold of the secret doctrine, and they, reading in it about the importance of the Aryan race, they gave it a very nationalistic, egotistical, racial interpretation instead of an interpretation regarding consciousness and not the outer form. We all know that in all the races there are those people who possess the mental illumination, potential mental illumination of the Aryan possibilities. But they made it an outwardly racial thing. It was a great misinterpretation. The negative forces got a hold of the information and wreaked havoc on the world, exalting themselves and minimizing the importance of others. So as far as I could and dared, I put it before the world aspirants and called attention to the general trend of world events from the spiritual and subjective angles. This evoked from all of you an immediate and gratifying response, a pleased response, you know, being one of the chosen ones to receive this information. But as he said, look, if you pride yourself on being one of the first to receive the information, you've completely missed my intent. It's not the right response at all. But it is possible, is it not, that this response has remained subjective, intellectually perceived, and aspirationally desired, but that the plan and the purposes of the kingdom of God are not yet truly a part of your life pattern and do not yet thoroughly condition your brain and activity life? Is it possible? Well, obviously, the correct answer there is yes. It's more than possible. It's possible to have an over-absorption of knowledge and do nothing about it. And there the karmic responsibility becomes very heavy. Is it possible? But it is possible, is it not, that this gratifying response, you know, being one of the chosen, it's a glamour, especially on the sixth ray, that this response has remained subjective, intellectually perceived, yes, aspirationally desired, but that the plan and the purpose of the kingdom of God, you know, are really not acting out through us, are not yet truly a part of your life pattern, and do not yet thoroughly, notice the word, condition your brain and your activity. Life activity, maybe partially, but not thoroughly. He's looking for a very complete response. Perhaps, therefore, the vision is not a part of your life and so integrated into your consciousness that you attach yourself to it as you have in the past attached yourself to individuals, you know, to the plan. First comes the plan, and those whom the plan serves, and then those who serve the plan. That's the sequence that we've been given of importance. But first, the plan. And maybe our consciousness has not attached itself to the true plan as it must precipitate. The vision is a vision of group work, of group relationships, of group objectives, and of the group fusion in to the larger whole. The vision is a vision of group work, of group relationships, of group objectives, and the group fusion to the larger whole. Obviously, everything under the Aquarian thought form relates to the group. And this we may forget as we strive for individual elevation. When this is realized, then the vision determines your life incentives, tendencies, and work. And when it is thus truly a part of your mental equipment, your emotional aspiration, and your activities, and when there are sufficient groups thus actuated, then the kingdom of God will function objectively upon the earth, and this is not yet the case because the needed conditions are not fulfilled. So he's basically saying, okay, we may have the vision, but we're not making the most of it, and we're not living it thoroughly, with it permeating every aspect of our life process. You know, just stop to think for a second. You know, is this true of us? Is this a kind of analysis? Is this analysis really true of the kind of people that we are? How commanding, how thorough is the vision in our life? Now, obviously, we know the direction in which we have to go. A vision of group work, group relationships, group objectives, group fusion to the larger whole. I think, you know, what did I have here? The orientation of I serve my brother, that's the group. And then the orientation of I serve the one, that's the whole. And the same kind of thing is found in Aquarius. Remember, the air signs will emerge as prominent during the age of Aquarius. So here's Gemini's an air sign. And here's the burden of humanity. That's the group. But then the wholeness is the burden of the world, the whole in which we live. I mean, you know, we live in the whole universe too, but there's no way that our little efforts will have anything but the most minuscule, hardly to be sensed effect upon the entire universe of God, the universal logos. But upon our planet, we can make a difference, you know. Great people have come and gone, and, you know, for good or for ill, I was thinking about Abraham Lincoln and contrasts with other presidents of the United States, and there was a difference made, you know, on the planet and in relation to the entire question of freedom. Freedom, think of it. The great Syrian law, the law of freedom, and the abolition of slavery. Oh, it's still existent, of course, because it is a cruel and ingrained attitude in the lower man who seeks to dominate others. But a big difference was made by this individual and by an individual like Roosevelt or Churchill. I mean, there's just so many great people, okay? And they've each done a little bit to make a noticeable difference on our planet. So, you know, we strive forward. So maybe one day in some life, we step forward and are filled with such a vision, such a revelation, realization, and such a will to good that what we do too can have an incremental effect on the emergence of the good of the divine plan for our planet, for our chain, eventually, you know, for the whole planetary scheme. The Christ, obviously, an individual like that is having a huge effect on the, you know, planetary scheme, really. And certainly on our planet and certainly in our chain, let's just say, certainly in our chain. Well, okay, friends, you know, my chronometer hit bottom again, and as it tends to do, we're up on to page 101. And I have to limit this to an hour program because there are webinars coming up and they must be treated. So we're here on page 98 to 101 is what we've dealt with. And I find this very exciting reading. I find it inspiring. I find that the etheric body is much stimulated by the illumining of the mind, you know. Hopefully there's some illumination occurring. So this is page 98 to 101, and next comes program 11. Will it be done in the wee hours of the night tonight? I don't know. Let's see. And the date is hard to say, but this date is the 2nd of February, and we'll see when we can carry on, maybe hopefully tomorrow. All right. Thank you for studying along with me. It's a study group activity in which we are engaged, and certain concepts are recommended to us as being impressive and important, and we try to lodge them in our memory and in our general consciousness and build upon them and see where they will lead and what their implications are for our life of discipleship. So many blessings, lots of love, and we'll see you when we see you. Won't be long now. Okay.